I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Kipnis trying to keep the Cubs alive. Two down, last of the ninth inning. 2-0 Miami. And the 2-2. Swing and a miss, and the ball game is over, and the Cubs season comes to an end. The Miami Marlins start to celebrate as they will advance to the National League Division Series, and the Cubs season for 2020 is now in the history books.
You are listening to Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Was a thrilling experience to have baseball back for both sides of town. They both made the playoffs, but here we are the first Saturday in October, and they are both done. The next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
Our good friend and fine color commentator on all Cubs baseball here at 670thescore.com. Our good friend Ron Coomer joining us today. Kind of a somber day, Cooms, after a pretty good season for the team that pulled out a division championship in this strange year, but not the ending that anybody wanted.
No, that's for sure, Bruce. Maddie, and yeah, coffee's not tasting quite as good this morning as it has the last week, I'll tell you that. It's a bummer. We all felt it last night when the game was over in the booth, and you know, you can see the players feel it. They all understand, and you know, the organization feels it, and the city feels it for both sides of town, right? I mean, you know, there was such high hopes for both teams, and thinking that one or both could go deep in the playoffs, and it just didn't work out. There are some issues on the north side with the Cubs ball club that need to be addressed. And I think on the south side, just from watching them play come playoff time and down the stretch, you know, they're getting a little understanding of what it's like to have the spotlight on them. So you've got, you know, both teams have to learn some lessons from this season, and there'll be some changes made, I know, on the north side. But the White Sox are in a little different position. Sad day yesterday, as you know. Whenever the season ends, unless you're popping champagne, it's never a happy moment. That's for sure.
I gotta say though, Coom, it was such a pleasure to have you and Ron and Zach back, and to have these games. And I didn't get to see it. Didn't even get to be at the park this year or be the occasional part of the broadcast as I have been. But there's got to be some satisfaction before we get to the change. There's got to be some satisfaction to the fact that the league pulled it off. The Cubs pulled it off. The Cubs Radio Network pulled it off. Like, you guys actually were able to be there and do it. Did you enjoy yourself amidst all the craziness?
We did, Maddie. And you know, there's no place I'd rather be hanging out than Wrigley Field. So for me, going there every day, it was very bizarre at times. I will say that. Some of the first games that we did with the team on the road, and Pat and I and Zach and Paul Zerang are sitting in the booth, and it's pitch black out, and it's 8 o'clock at night, and there's not a soul in Wrigley Field but us, and I'd scream out, "Hello out there!" You know, you could hear me on the rooftops across the street just to make everybody laugh once in a while. But it was bizarre. But I really think at the time that we came back to play, and we, you know, I remember coming back to Chicago in mid-June for, you know, thinking that we might play anytime soon or at least get things started. When we did get started in July, I was, I think our country needed it. And, yeah, you know, it got off to a bumpy start, but I think everybody realized the importance of what we were doing, and you know, a lot of people sacrificed a lot of things to get this season off the ground and continue it. So you got to tip your hat to a lot of young guys that, you know, the old guys like us, stay in a bubble. Okay. You got room service. Okay. You know, it's the young kids. If you were 22 years old, would you want to stay in a hotel room for month after month after month? That's asking an awful lot of these young kids. And a lot of them did really well. So, you know, you can be proud of the fact that we did play baseball.
The Cubs had self-created energy off the bench, beginning with Anthony Rizzo and that group, as much as anybody. You know, we were in the ballpark. We got to hear that bench on every pitch, especially beginnings of games, the whole group just cheering on each hitter, kind of like you would hear in a high school or a college game,
right?
Even more so. But unfortunately, the Cubs never were able to produce offensively at home all year long. They hit 210 as a team at Wrigley Field. Javier Baez went into great detail about how much his energy level missed the fans, how much the team missed the fans, how they weren't able to use video as part of getting between innings in order to adjust like they have in the past. But can you put a finger on what went wrong offensively for the Chicago Cubs and why they were so dreadful trying to put good at bats together as a team?
Well, first of all, when you have as many hitting coaches as they've had over the last 4 or 5 years, that's difficult. You never have continuity with the message, right? So that's not easy, you know. And some of the things that are going to happen now in these exit meetings, you know, I remember Chili being around, and I've known Chili Davis a long time, and you talk about a great baseball guy. And an excellent hitting coach, and he got bounced after 1 year, and the guys didn't like him, and he had great ideas. I'm just telling you, I know Chili, and I know how he hit. He did it as a player, and he's doing it as a coach. And John Mainley got let go, and there were, you know, some guys self-destruct, some guys get bounced, some guys, you know, are trying to come in and create something new. And when all of that happens, Bruce, I just think it's difficult, especially. Even though this Cubs group is a talented group, you know, I haven't seen them through their prime of their career getting better. I see them, you know, changing their approaches as the seasons have gone on. And now you're at a point where, you know, David Ross made the comment on one of our Zoom calls that, you know, the offense is what it is. We walk and hit homers. That's how we score. And he was correct. There's no doubt about that. It was not an inaccurate statement. But that's a tough way to win when you're playing playoff baseball. It really is. And, you know, so they got to go back to the drawing board and start creating some different approaches at the plate and understanding that swinging uphill and trying to hit home runs for everybody in the lineup just isn't getting it done.
Especially when so many do it in a similar way, it becomes attackable, for lack of a better word, for the opposition. I hear you loud and clear, Coom. I guess the question is, can guys adjust, and do they want to hear voices like Chili's or otherwise, or does there come a time when you have to move on and try to mix things up as best you can, even if the value isn't quite there at a particular moment, that maybe it's time to mix it up because guys aren't developing that approach that you're talking about?
Well, I think there's going to be a combination that there's no one way to answer that question, Matt. So you're going to see some change with the Cubs roster. There is no doubt about that. This slide is continued, and there's going to be change. So this team that you've seen is not going to be the exact same team. You're going to see a lot of new faces come February and March and spring training. But yes, guys can change. Kyle Schwarber can definitely change. I watched Anthony Rizzo at the end of the year work on his stroke to be able to get on top of the baseball just a little bit more. I mean, you're not talking about, you're talking about a guy that's a 30 and 100 and always around 280. He doesn't have to make a lot of changes, but, you know, just slight changes. And then in the thought process, you know, probably more so than anything, I thought the Cubs were very tentative the second half of this season in hitters counts. 2-0, 3-1, you grind through the game to get to that point to have the game in your favor. Take advantage of that. And I didn't think they did. They took a lot of fastballs and good hitters counts. And when you're doing that against good pitchers, especially come playoff time, I saw a stat yesterday after the game that was alarming. The Cubs, since the 2016 World Series championship team, are hitting well under 200 in the playoffs. Well under. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is alarming because You build your team. If you're a good ball club, you're building it for playoff baseball, right? That's what you're doing. And if that's the, if you're hitting under 200 for year after year, come playoff time, the approach has to change.
Coombs, when you look at the pitching staff of the Cubs, there's going to be great changes there. John Lester said that in his latest Zoom a couple days ago that he hopes to come back. They have a obviously it's a $25 million contract, which they will turn down, and they have to pay him $10 million just to say goodbye to him. But bringing him back at this point, do you think that makes sense? I mean, we know the impact that John Lester had on the Chicago Cubs franchise. We know he'll go down as most likely the greatest free agent signing in Cub history, and so impactful not only for what he brought on the field but what he brought to that locker room. He was just a champion all the way around. But at this point in time, can you afford to take a step forward with an aging John Lester as a part of the mix, or is it essential for him to come back knowing that you don't have the replacements quite yet in the minor leagues to come up and pitch in the rotation? You might have Alzolay. We still don't know what he is or whether he can do the maximum amount of innings. You have certainly Marquez that we saw for one inning against the White Sox. That looks like he has a bright future, a guy that throws the ball extremely well, but may need another year in the minor leagues. How do you patch forward with the pitching staff, Coombs?
Well, I think you're looking at Johnny. First of all, I needed to get his agent. That's pretty good for for not playing. He's getting 10 big ones. That's pretty good.
Yep.
That's your money, Bruce.
That's that Levine money. That's right.
Yeah, I don't dress that way, but I've got it.
You know, to me, I really believe John Lester has figured out what it takes for the 36-year-old John Lester to pitch in our league now. I really do. I don't think that they're all going to be perfect. He's going to have some hiccups during the season, like every 36-year-old does. But I really believe if you're going to pay him that much money to leave, who would you get to be a fourth or fifth starter that would be better than John? I just don't know, and have the impact in a clubhouse that he could have. So you may be able to put something together in a package that pays him something that he would feel comfortable taking and keeping him around. That could be a possibility.
But if he's a five, Coombs, who's your three and four? I mean, you know, Mills was a nice pitcher for him. He filled some important innings. Obviously, he had the great no-hitter. Mm-hmm. But you know, who's your three and four? Do you attempt to sign Quintana to a 1-year deal, knowing he's a free agent? Do you think he would accept that? Do you feel that would be patchwork to get forward and let some of the young pitchers in the organization continue to develop?
Well, let's for me, I think you got to give Mills another chance too. He's got to be put into the rotation again and let him pitch and see if he continues to get better. Right? I mean, you know, he gave you significant innings, as you said. He threw a no-hitter. To me, you know, he reminds you of a lot of the fours and fives on the other teams. He's young and trying to figure it out, but he showed that, you know, he can pitch in the league, and I got no problem with him being in that rotation, and he's affordable. So that's the give and take maybe with a Lester contract, where you got a guy that's going to be under $1 million maybe, and you got John that you're paying a little bit more to get his presence and to understand what he brings. The three spot, I think you go out there and you just see what's available, you know, in trades. The thing about this, about rehabbing or reconfiguring the pitching staff, you're going to have a lot of people coming to Chicago when you start trading people away. So there's going to be big names going the other direction, Bruce. So that's the other option and thing, and the question that you don't know. When you're sending a name out that's a big name that's had impact in the league, what are you getting back, right? So I think that's one way to look at how you're going to maybe change up the rotation. Signing free agents, to me, is always a risky business. But, boy, if you can bring in kids and a couple of them pan out, I think that's the way to go. But John, to me, is the rare bird. And I, boy, he's made such an impact on this group. He just really has. When you look at what he's done as a Chicago Cub, when you talk about pitchers, is there anybody that's been more impactful in a Cub uniform?
Not in the last 100 years.
I don't think among free agents in the history of this town, Ron, you got Marian Hossa came and helped teach the Blackhawks how to win, right? And they won 3 cups. But like, it's him and John Lester. That's your
right?
conversation.
I mean, Kerry Wood was, you know, a great Cub and a great pitcher and all of those things and just embraced the city and all of those things. But you know, with all that being said, all of us that put on a Cubs uniform, none of us won the World Series. John not only won the World Series, but he pitched on 2 days rest to get them to the win in the middle of a ball game with 3 shutout innings. I mean, after dominating all the playoffs and all that, I mean, you know, when you think about John's resume, you give it a wow, right? You really do.
And that will be the legacy of Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer here, is identifying John Lester and Joe Maddon. Those
Absolutely.
Two things happened within a month of each other, and they were the most impactful things that Epstein and Hoyer will be remembered for long after they're not running the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, and the ability to draft some and identify position player core pieces like Rizzo, who they loved and went and got from San Diego, and then Bryant, who they drafted and was so brilliant. I need to ask you about Bryant Coombe just because I didn't see the power or the slug all year long, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. It's certain fly balls. I'd be like, man, he usually destroys that thing. Where is it? And then he goes down with the last injury and comes back for that White Sox series. There's a first-pitch fastball homer, a first-pitch curveball homer, and I'm thinking, oh, there he is. But I don't – what was it? Do we know what it was and where it went, and will it come back for Chris Bryant?
Well, I can speak – the hardest part, Matt, is understanding this season for all of us, right? I mean, none of us had access to the players. Everybody deals with these situations differently with everything that's gone on. KB had a lot going on in his life as the season was starting. I'm sure there were questions whether he should play or not with a newborn baby in the house. All those things are tough. What I saw, without knowing his mental state, right, and all of those things, just because I was never around him, and KB is a great young guy, to me, there was a breakdown, a serious breakdown in the mechanics of his swing. That was one. I got a chance before the playoffs to watch Game 7, and it's some of the World Series. Let's just say some of the highlight stuff of the World Series, but in particular, the ball he hit out of the ballpark in the second inning in the World Series late. I think it was either Game 6 or 7. Was it Game 7, Bruce? I think it was Game 7. Anyway, it was a curveball, and he put the front foot, landed in his stride, and he paused right there, saw the pitch, bang, and he hooked that ball to left field in Cleveland and hit it a mile. That swing, to me, was so glaring. I went, whoa, there's KB. We never saw that this season because he had a breakdown. He had a lot of movement. His upper body, we call it a top half lead, or keep your head out of the strike zone. There's a lot of terms for, you know, old-fashioned terms that we would use when we were playing. But you saw his head moving forward a lot, and then when the pitch was in, him coming back away from the ball, right? When your head is moving like that, you can't recognize breaking pitches the way you should, the way he did in 16 when he was an MVP. You just can't. And we did not see him hit those pitches even remotely close. We saw a lot of off the bat, out in front, top spin lobs, even the balls he hit down the line. And I just think he needs to be able to get back to the recognition of the pitch and keeping his upper body still as the ball's coming. And he just had a really hard time doing that this season. Without that, you can't be a big league hitter.
Coombs, we certainly appreciate you joining us and all that you do for us during the year on The Score. And we're going to miss hearing you and Pat, but hopefully we'll stay in touch and have you on the show a lot over the off season, because we know it's going to be interesting to see how the Cubs are rebuilt and how baseball manages going forward after this very, very odd season. Thanks again from Matt.
Yeah, Bruce, it was great as always. We have some great baseball conversations at the ballpark. That was great. And Matty, it's great to hear you back on every day, or almost every day in the afternoons, buddy. So great to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on all season. And I know we will talk soon.
You're the best, Coom.
All right,
thanks,
Coombs.
Buddy. It's Ron
Coomer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad to say goodbye for the season, isn't it, Matt? It's just the ending of the year, and Sox and Cub fans do not want to say goodbye to this season. But all we have left is postseason and our game, of course. Our show, of course, every Saturday from 9 to 11, will be here for you talking ball.
Go Padres. Go Padres is where I am. We'll come back, and let's shift to the Sox and talk about the future of the manager, shall we, Bruce?
We shall. And Ted Simmons, the newest Hall of Famer, joining us at 10:45 to talk about the life and times of the great Bob Gibson.
Outstanding. It's Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends, after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
I mean, a lot, man. You just allow, each and every one of those guys to, go out and compete, the way they want to, and allow us to be ourselves. Ever since I got here, he's been nothing but great. And, just allow me to be myself and allow me to play the game the way I want to. And we made it this far. So, we just got to keep working, man. Keep working. I think he's the right guy.
That is Tim Anderson talking about his manager, Ricky Renteria. He's allowed them to be themselves. We just got to keep working. I think he's the right guy, is how he closes it, Bruce Levine.
And you don't, Matt?
No, I do. I give Ricky another year. I give Ricky another year. I give Ricky a chance with a full year. I think it's okay to let your manager grow a little bit when he is clearly an excellent atmosphere provider for those guys. He's clearly an excellent helper for Tim Anderson, for Lucas Giolito, for many, many guys have credited Ricky for being a part of things. I think he's got strategic issues, and there's stuff that we can pick apart, certainly, just from this playoff run. But I'm in the camp that I give Ricky a full season, a full fair shake, and a little room to grow himself as a manager.
The points you make are very valid. In this day and age, and in particular in sports, it's essential for you as a manager of a team or a coach of a team to sell yourself to the group, okay? That's number one, okay? It never used to be, it used to be that the group had to sell themselves to the manager in order to get to play, mm-hmm. or the coach in the NBA to get on the court unless they were a superstar. In this day and age, it's all about, we're millennials, we need to be talked to in a certain way, we need to be told why certain things are, we need to be treated in a certain way, and if you're not up to that, you are not going to be successful as a coach or a manager in sports in the 2020s. There's no question about it. And from that perspective, Ricky Renteria gets an A+ as far as getting his people ready to play, getting them excited about playing, having him get the work done, and wanting to play for him. He gets an A+. As the strategy goes, and he learns how to negotiate and handle a pitching staff in meaningful games and in certain situations that are essential with a developing young group of pitchers in a bullpen, I think you're right. Ricky Renteria gets a little bit more time. That doesn't mean that there weren't some mistakes that cost them games the last 10 games of the season and possibly into the playoffs here. But nonetheless, it's not about firing Ricky Renteria for that at this point. It's all about him growing as well mm-hmm. by learning how to handle a bullpen. And let's face it, it's, you know, with DHs in both leagues, Matt, and starting pitchers who they are, it's all about how you handle and manipulate a bullpen, isn't it? I mean, the strategy is 90% bullpen at this point in baseball.
Yeah, and that's a very difficult thing. And we know that the White Sox as an organization have made massive leaps forward in recent years, both with technology. And how about the stuff Evan Marshall told us a few weeks back on mm-hmm. Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce, about how they look at things situationally and look at spots in the lineup as they're choosing which guys to implement at which times. And I had some issues with what Ricky did in Game 3. But all of them were reasoned in terms of, all right, I want this guy for this batch of the lineup here and this guy for this batch of the lineup here. So, you know, they've moved forward, they've progressed, and they also needed one more starter. You know, they needed Renato yep. Lopez to step up and claim the three, or Dylan Cease to step up and claim the three, or Dane Dunning to not hit the wall the way that he did. My biggest problem specifically, and it seems we're in agreement in terms of Ricky's overall place, but my biggest problem with Game 3 specifically is if your hook is going to be that fast for Dane Dunning, then he shouldn't start. Like, I would have started Cease, or I would have started a reliever I'm going to try and let get through two innings, like Matt Foster or something like that. Like, you've got to give whoever you start a chance to actually do a job and give you a couple of innings, two outs and two base runners, and you pull Dunning. I think the bullpen was active after one hitter. If the leash is that short, then I don't think you should start, in my opinion.
Yeah, again, it's a process for Ricky, even though he's a veteran baseball guy with a tremendous amount of knowledge and certainly one of the finest people I've met in the game on top of that. But that aside, has nothing to do with what we're talking about. The fact is that they were overactive in their pursuit to stop any run scoring whatsoever. When you change, Matt, here's the essential thing for me. When you change a pitcher in the first inning with two outs to negate the opposition from scoring, that means that you don't feel you're going to score more than one run.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the other
that's daunting, isn't it? I mean,
yes, it is.
That's the message. Tell me if you're wrong, if you think I'm wrong, Matt, but that's the message you're sending out, that we're not going to score, and therefore we have to hold them from scoring a run in the first inning here.
No, I, yep.
or putting together any type of inning whatsoever. And to me, that, you know, I understand they had a plan and it was well thought out, but I can't live with that. You initially brought it up that you have to get more length out of Dunning, or otherwise he doesn't start the game. Start Evan Marshall if you want two innings.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with you. And you know who else agrees with you is Frank Thomas. Let's play two quick pieces of tape here on this so people get a chance to hear it. First is Frank Thomas from the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago about Ricky Renteria's bullpen moves.
First two innings, we gave it away. You know, I'm upset about it because we understand all hands on deck. But you cannot warm up your bullpen after the first batter. I mean, that instills no confidence throughout your lineup, throughout your pitching staff. This was a team that have scored so many runs. You can't say we're not going to score today. That's what it sounds like. We're not going to score today. It was just ugly. It was a disaster. And 1-3-0. This team misused the bullpen early, caused us not to hold a lead later on in the ball game. So just an ugly game. It was a disastrous show. This team deserved better because of the way they played this year. There's no other nice way to put this.
That's Frank Thomas. And then after the game, Ricky Renteria talking to you guys on the Zoom call and responding about the questioning of his bullpen moves in general.
I think we handled the bullpen as good as we could possibly handle it. I think that today's game was a unique situation. But I think... I'll say to you, as I tell everybody, that's up to you guys to grade yesterday. David didn't do well, and I don't do that with myself. I do it in private if I think I've had an issue or something that I've made. I leave the scrutiny, thankfully, to all of you. Trust me. We beat ourselves up enough. We are harder on ourselves, and you guys have heard me say this before. We beat ourselves up enough and are harder on ourselves than anybody could possibly be on us if we feel that we misstepped.
So what do you make of that, Bruce Levine? Ricky defending himself.
It's honest. I mean, he's been consistent all year. He will not bite on people asking him to rate his performance. Performance in his mind, and he's been very consistent about this as well. Things that are in the past are in the past. We'll analyze it, and we'll beat ourselves up when things don't work out. It's up to you and you guys in the media and the fans to decide what you think on your side. I'm not going to analyze myself in public and say whether I'm right or wrong or in between. And I think it's a fair way to deal with criticism than saying, hey, I made a huge mistake. This was planned out. This was the route that they took. This is the structure that the manager and the coaches and the pitching staff had going in, and they stuck to it. Unfortunately, they didn't get what they wanted out of Crochet. He got hurt. They were hoping for 2 to 3 innings from him, and that kind of tipped the ship in a bad direction.
670, The Score is where you are. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. Going to be a fascinating offseason on both sides of town, that's for sure. The baseball world took a terrible hit late last night with news of the passing of Bob Gibson, Bruce.
Indeed, and we'll have Ted Simmons, the Hall of Famer, just in, going to have his induction next year. It was put off this year. The Hall of Famer who caught Bob Gibson in the early 70s, join us after the break. This is 670 and 670thescore.com.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first run. Now his infielders all over him. A new world record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
It's a pretty good day. 1968 World Series, the late Bob Gibson right there. My favorite stat about 1968 that I've read, Bruce Levine, is that Gibson pitched in 37 games that year. He completed 31 of them. The other six, he was removed for a pinch hitter, meaning he was removed for a relief pitcher never, not once in 1968. Not bad.
How do you have a 1.12 ERA, Matt, and lose 8 games? That to me is the amazing stat. As we welcome in a good friend of ours, why don't you set me up, Matt?
Our next guest joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
Ted Simmons, one of the newest Hall of Fame members and will be inducted in 2021. Nice enough to take some time out of a busy schedule with being one of the top scouts for the Atlanta Braves to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Teddy, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time. And let's just jump right into what was it like as a 20-year-old catcher with the St. Louis Cardinals catching Bob Gibson?
Well, it was like a very, very bright light was turned on in a very dark room. I can assure you I'd never seen anything like him before, and I certainly had never seen any pitcher like him before. And as I say, it was such a bright, shining star that I felt like a baby brother trying to assimilate with all of that. But it was remarkable. It was memorable. It was really the first real look I got at a profound Hall of Fame pitcher. I didn't really know what I was looking at the time, but I knew I was looking at something very, very special.
You get to catch Steve Carlton and Bob Gibson and Jerry Royce, Reggie Cleveland, all in that 71 Cardinals team. But it's quite a collection, Ted. What made Gibson so special beyond the stuff? We hear about the toughness. We hear about the intimidation. Did you get a feeling for that? And looking back, do you appreciate it even more than you did at the time, perhaps?
Well, what I saw was a guy who, as you mentioned, was very competitive, very intense. That was easy just by his posture, his demeanor on a pitcher's mound. But what I saw for the first time was how a guy who would aggressively utilize his fastball and pitch inside to anybody. I mean, back in those days, there were some, fairly good hitters floating around, particularly in Pittsburgh and other places. And, I mean, he used his fastball to tell these hitters that, okay, decide what you want to do. If you get too aggressive on that outside half, I got a big surprise coming for you. And he would pitch inside, not necessarily to knock you down or necessarily to hit you, but to tell you, this is my territory, and I can come in here at will, and you're not going to like it. And that's the first guy I really saw who would do that consistently and open my eyes to say, hey, this is a very effective pitcher who has the command and the velocity to do this. And you learned by watching him do it that this was applicable to the other pitchers. And so as a catcher, you bring that to Carlton. You would bring that to Royce. You would bring that to the other pitchers who had skill. And, as I say, I was so young at that time. I was seeing things for the very first time, and I was seeing it as well as it could be done. So it was pretty hard to miss.
Talking to Ted Simmons, the newest Hall of Fame member going in 2021 as a group induction that next year. And Ted, when you look at Bob Gibson, the man, what did you learn about the individual in his preparation, in your preparation with him, and just as a baseball player and teammate?
Well, this guy had the command of everything, not just his skill set and his stuff as a pitcher. He had the command of every room he was ever in. Mm-hmm. When Bob Gibson was in the room, everyone knew it. I mean, you could not go in that clubhouse and not start trying to find out where he was. He was that commanding a person. He was big. He was physical. He was very handsome. He was very intelligent. He was diverse. And once, you know, you got through that defense mechanism that he kind of, mm-hmm. that first door he kept locked all the time, once he unlocked that door and opened it and you got in, you found a very, very, very interesting and bright guy. He was nowhere like the guy you saw on the mound. When, as I say, that first door got opened, he was he was warm. He was, as I say, engaging. But you had to get through that front door, and he kept that locked. But as I say, command of everything. I mean, as I say, I don't care what room he was in. If you walked in that room, it'd be a matter of seconds that you focus on him and try your best to identify him if you'd never seen him before. He had that kind of command.
Hey, Ted, those Atlanta Braves that you work for, pretty darn good and advancing. Who do you, when you watch that team, who are you proud of? Who do you feel a connection to as you watch that team play as well as they did in the first round?
Well, you know, there's a lot of young guys over there, and I saw a lot of them come along. The Freed kid, the left-handed pitcher, has done remarkably well for his age. I saw him in high school. And he had a curveball that in high school, as a 17-year-old, he would, you know, he could throw two balls and no strike and throw a curveball and be right down the middle. 3-1, he'd throw it again, swing and miss or called strike two. And 3-2, he'd throw it again, and a high school batter didn't have a chance. So you could tell that he had a major league curveball when he was 17 years old. At that time, he was like 91, 92 tops, but you could see, because he was just a little skinny thing back then, had height, but hadn't developed physically yet. And you knew that when he did, he would gain velocity. You know, you have to look to the first baseman, Freeman, who's done such a remarkable job all year. He's done well. But the guy who I feel good for was Ozuna, because he was here in St. Louis. And I had the Cardinals recommended him, and he's come and done a really, really good job. So he's kind of helped make me smarter. But, but you know, take your pick. Their kids have done really well. The shortstop finally looks like he's a player and a real factor. So Acuna, Albies, this is a really, really talented young team. And pitchers, one after another, they're young enough and getting better that they could be a really solid team for quite some time.
Teddy, we appreciate you hopping on last moment notice and knowing how busy you are preparing for the upcoming playoffs. Continued the best to you and your family. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again. Thanks again for joining Matt and I on Inside the Clubhouse today.
Matt, Bruce, always a pleasure. Take care, man. Stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ted.
The great Teddy Simmons joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. We have people to thank, and we have things to say as Rosie and Grody getting ready to warm up in the bullpen and come in. Matt, first of all, great regular season for us. We'll be here for you every Saturday in the off season talking baseball. So baseball season never ends here at The Score. We're thanking Ron Coomer for joining us, Ted Simmons, the Hall of Famer, as well, Adam Studzinski for a tremendous job producing this show. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB. Bruce Levine also right on the website at 670thescore.com. Cubs and Sox every day. Matt, have a great week.
You too, Bruce. Cam Newton has tested positive for coronavirus, will not travel with the Patriots. That among the big sports news that Rosie and Grody will cover for you next. Thanks, Adam. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, all you callers and listeners, for a great regular season. As Bruce said, it'll be a fascinating offseason, and we'll be here every week of it Saturday morning. Have a great day, everybody.